Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today, we're going to talk to a woman named Tara Bennett. She has written a book called The Lost Encyclopedia, this huge volume of the TV show Lost that is out from DK Books, and she's here to talk about it. Hello.
Hello, thank you so much for having me back. It's wonderful to be able to chat with you about a new project.
It is. I'm looking at this book now. This is such a humongous book. I mean, I've been carrying it around all day with me to get set for the interview, and it's so heavy.
Yeah, Paul Perry, my co-writer, and I, we both like to say that it at least weighs as much as it took to write. It's a big, fat coffee table book, and we were even shocked when we got our first copies. We were like, wow, these are pretty heavy, but it was a year's worth of work, and, it definitely is, according to, my experience, this was Paul's first book, but for me, I've done several, and it was by far the most complicated and the most time-consuming and the most stressful and probably the biggest project that I've ever worked on.
And it goes alphabetically. Everything in the show, having to do with the show, it starts at A and then it goes all the way to Z. All the characters, everything that shows up, almost everything is in this alphabetical listing here from the show.
Yeah, they had, in the first year of Lost, they had thought that they would, like other shows have done, do like a companion guide series. And obviously, if you're a fan of Lost, you quickly realize that the show is incredibly complicated. And even the writers, left things open for them to be able to, make changes in the story if cast, changed or storylines moved into directions that they, hadn't initially thought that they were going to go into. A lot of that happened in the complicated crafting of that show, and they quickly realized after the first companion guide that, this isn't going to work. It's too complicated. We don't want to feel like, the books become obsolete, because of the changing of the writing. And so they stopped writing anything official about the mythology of the show after that first companion guide. And then as the show came to its close, a little bit before the end of the sixth season started airing for fans, Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse had options on what they wanted to do to kind of put all of this world together, and they really liked the idea of doing the encyclopedic version, which is what you were talking about, an A to Z in-world book where all of the mythology that they had created for 6 years would be able to be put together in one place in an encyclopedic format where each entry was complete from beginning to end, starting where a character started and then where they ended up at the very end of the series. And, DK has done several of these encyclopedias in lots of different genres, with official and history capacity, but then also in pop culture with Star Wars and WWE and lots of other different places. So everybody agreed that that was the best way to go. And Paul, Terry, my co-writer, and I have had a long relationship with the show, working on their official behind-the-scenes magazine, which was really kind of the how the show is made that we used to come out with every 2 months. And we were very grateful when they approached Paul and asked him to do the encyclopedia and then said, hey, Paul, this is really big. Can you think of somebody else you'd want to work with on this? And, gratefully, and God love him, he said, Tara, who I've worked with for years, is really the only person I'd like to do it with.
So, how cool is that? You got to see it filmed. I mean, you were there for some of the filming, were you not?
Yeah. I got to go out to Hawaii twice, so I was out for the fifth season and the sixth season. And
And you only started the fifth season doing that. Okay.
They had a really tight lockdown on the show. Even when they brought press in from like TV Guide or E, it was very, very controlled about when they could go, what episodes that they could go, and by the fifth and sixth year, Paul and I had such a great working relationship with the show, and they knew that we could shut up and that we knew plenty about the show that, other people didn't know, that I was allowed to just go out on my own. I didn't have to go with other press groups. It was just me, and they didn't care, when I went and what episode it was.
I guess you still had to sign a disclaimer agreement just to make sure
I've worked with, you and I've talked before about my 24 books, and I've worked with Lost, and I've worked with movies, doing like Tomb Raider Salvation and such. So it's just part and parcel for me to to know that, you know, the mouth is the Fort Knox. I see things, but I don't talk about it except in the capacity, the very secure capacity of which, you know, with my editors or, you know, just with the show that I'm working with. That's a great thing about my career is that I'm trusted because I know it might be fun to go and tell people the secrets, but it's much more fun to be trusted by the shows that I work with and get to work with them in that kind of capacity. So,
and I assume everybody you met on the show was pretty nice, all the actors and behind the scenes people.
I've had great relationships with them, you know, because of the magazine and being able to interview pretty much.
Did you make any friends from the cast?
I never, a lot of people like to take pictures of people, and I don't ever presume that, you know, just because I have a really good working relationship that I am, like, friends, but I am very friendly with a lot of people that worked on the show. I had a great relationship with Evangeline Lilly. I had a really great relationship with Michael Emerson and Nestor Carbonell. So, you know, I mean, those are just really great working relationships and, you know, friendly relationships with them that, just made for better interviews and, made for really nice sharing and exposure with their interviews with me because we had a great working relationship for so many years that, you know, I've got better things than maybe some other in my field did. So that was always just very complimentary and always, very special.
It's one of these shows, now it ended in May, and I still miss it. It's just one of these shows that when it's over, it's like, wow, now what do I watch? You know, you don't... It was so extraordinary. I mean, something really extraordinary. And there have been shows that they've tried to repeat the success, and it just doesn't work unless you have the dynamic that this show had. There was something about this show.
There was. You're 100% right, and I hear it from so many people. Exactly how you phrased it, the lost hole is in my heart. You know, there's nothing that a lot of fans feel that have, you know, been even closely come to replace. You know, or feel as appointment viewing as Lost did, and they just really figured out a great alchemy. You know, when that show started, from the very pilot, you know, when you saw, you know, the POV of the monster, you know, chasing, and, you know, you see it swaying in the dark in the palm trees. It's something out there that's, you know, very sci-fi oriented. But while they introduced that as a very thin kind of layer to what was happening on this island post-crash, more than anything, they really spent that whole first year letting you get to know these people. You know, you really fell in love with, Jack's story or Kate's story or Sawyer's story or Saeed's story, all of them, you know, even when you had an episode about maybe characters that you didn't love as much as others, it was still very interesting. And, it was a character story first, and that earned them being able to kind of go crazy by season 5 and make it, you know, a full-out sci-fi time story, you know, time-jumping story. So a lot of shows that try to capture what Lost did, they do it wrong because they have the characters running around trying to accomplish something, yet they don't give full episodes for you to learn who they are. And it feels like, you know, manic or, you know, thrillery, but you don't have the investment. And I think that's been a lot of the big mistakes with shows subsequently that have tried to fill the Lost gap is that they don't look back to the template of it was character and it always remained character from beginning to end with that show, even when they introduced some crazy high concept stuff.
Is there anything that wasn't answered for you? I mean, people had different things. They said, well, this wasn't really answered. This wasn't. Was there anything that stood out for you that nearly never got answered that you would have liked to have seen answered?
It's a good question. I think Paul and I got to really deep, you know, dig deep into the mythology. We learned a lot of things that we thought maybe hadn't been answered. You know, the show was so complicated that, you know, you oftentimes watched.
Well, they did it. I think they did it intentionally, making.
Yeah, they did.
Way.
They left it. Yeah, and you know, I did a.
There's even a thing on here on the smoke monster, which is amazing. I mean, the smoke monster is one of the most fascinating things in the. And it's not even a person; it's just a thing.
No, it's a thing. It's an entity. I know you're going, really? What the heck is that thing? Yeah, no. I mean, Paul and I guess we kind of feel like no. I think we feel like there was a fascinating event that I went to the last year, this is the very end of season 5, that the whole writing staff of Lost did a talk with new writers at the WGA facility in Los Angeles, and some somebody got up and, you know, just a regular fan that was also a student of screenwriting and said, you know, hey, why didn't you ever do this story about, you know, why Jack really didn't like Aaron and why he didn't want to parent Aaron when, you know, he and Kate, you know, were back off of the island. And the writers kind of looked at each other and went, wait, you think that's a story? And they're going, well, yeah, it's a story. Why didn't? And they actually were surprised by it, and they explained something that really resonated with me and Paul and I think other people that heard it, is that they said, you know, that's a story that never was a story to us as writers. But the great thing about the show is that, you know, we would write an episode and it would, there would be all of this minutia that fans would go, wait, no, that's a story to me. And they loved that, even though they weren't aware that they were actually leaving things out there that seemed like an unfinished story to, you know, millions of viewers. And so, you know, that's, it's such a subjective thing about what wasn't finished, is because I think everybody watched it under a filter of going, oh, well, yeah, that explains something to me, and someone right next to them going like, no, I want to know more about that. So it's kind of like a great novel where, you know, at the end you don't have everything tied up tidily. You're left as a reader to kind of ponder and think, where did they go and what happened next? And, you know, have a time when you're driving in your car and you're, you know, daydreaming about where that story would go. You know, I think that's really what Lost left for fans as well, is that, you know, yeah, some things weren't tidy, but a great story isn't. It lets you breathe and live it for years on, wondering what happened next.
Right. And the great thing about the book is there's things in this book, I'm like, I didn't realize Nathan Fillion was even in the show at one point.
I know, isn't that funny?
I mean, where did how did I miss that? I mean there's just so much. And how could, I don't know how you could possibly remember every character. I think some of the youth of today, I'm over 40, so I don't remember things like I used to remember things. But but there's so many characters in here. I mean, character actors. I mean, Kevin Tai from Emergency as Hurley's father, and Veronica Hamill as... Who was that?
That's Jack's mother? Yeah.
Jack's mother. I mean, all these... And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are a lot more.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the fun thing, especially, you know, the book is in-world, which means, you know, if people aren't familiar, that it's written like the mythology of the show. So it's not a behind-the-scenes, oh, this actor played so-and-so. But the wonderful thing is for every image that we possibly could put in there and secure the rights for, we put them in the book. So you get a photo history of everybody, you know, that we could include, you know, and you go, oh, my gosh, that's right, they were in it. And, you know, minor characters, you know, that you have seen in lots of other projects. And, there's the guy that, my mind is blanking right now. I'm doing the same thing that you're doing, but the guy that created It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you know, he was a minor other that came back in the last season again, and everybody looked at him and, wait a minute, he's on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and, you know, it's like, no, he was in it before, too, and he's back. It's just that, you know, in the years that it's been since he's been on the show, he's, you know, blown up himself and has become a great big actor, and so there's plenty of those cases, you know, where you look and you go, oh my gosh, I totally forgot they were on the show, or I didn't know they were, you know, that I was watching them, and now they're in something so much bigger, and it's really kind of fascinating because it was 6 years, you know, of a really strong caliber of casting of people rolling through there, people that were of, you know, Billy Dee Williams and
it was cool that you knew it was cool, before you watched the show, each episode you knew what it was, who it was going to be centered around, and that was interesting to see what exactly they were going to do with the character in this episode. So I mean, you could know in advance, sometimes 2 or 3 weeks in advance, who it was going to be centered around.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And if it was a character you like, you're like, oh, I can't wait to see that one now.
What are they going to tell? Yeah, it was always exciting to know that you were going to get some new tidbit and how it was going to, what part of their life we were going to see, especially, you know, back in their history.
I can't imagine how much the show cost to produce. It had to be millions and millions and millions to produce every week. I mean,
it was on the higher end, just, you know, because they shot it in Hawaii, and that's, you know, while they do have some tax credit things in Hawaii, it's an island, you know, where they have to bring in a lot of things. But, most TV shows on the lower end for network, you know, they're about $2 to $3 million an episode, and on the higher end, it's $5 to $6 million. And Lost was on the higher end, just because of where they shot at. But it was.
I assume they sold it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I assume they sell it overseas and make a lot of money there too. So I mean, it definitely makes Lost, its money back. But
Lost did really well on DVD, and that helped. And it did really well, with its rights being sold across the world, which is really good. It really, while it may not have gotten, NCIS numbers here in the U.S. or, even Grey's Anatomy numbers, but it certainly had a huge water cooler factor, and, it was the show that people talked about all the time. So it still had a good, advertiser premium, which was important, to help them defer and pay, an expensive looking and a very dynamic show like that.
I'll tell you what made me laugh is looking at the nicknames for Hurley. They were just hysterical. I mean, the Stay Puff.
Yeah. That was mine. I got to do Sawyer, his entry, and it took a lot to go through every episode and, read scripts and make sure that I had all the references, but it's been nothing but awesome that I've gotten a lot of really great feedback and reviews and such, where people are like, "Oh my gosh, you have all of Sawyer's nicknames!" It was a lot of fun.
It seemed like across the board, this show took a lot out of the actors. I mean, you would see them on talk shows, mm-hmm. and they talk about how exhausting the work was. I mean, just. You watch these shows and you forget they have to. Every detail's got to look good. So I mean, they may film a scene 3, 4, 5, 10 times. Who knows, to make it look good?
Yeah, no, I learned that too myself. I was out in Hawaii for the first episode of season 5, which was the one where the island moved, and we come back with the repercussions of that. And while they were, I was out in the jungle. Right. As they were shooting, and they were tramping through the jungle talking about what's going on, and it was when they came back to the hatch after time had skipped, and they basically come to the hatch and see Desmond's in there in his hazmat suit, and it was hot. I was standing out there, dripping sweat, and you're watching them do the same thing for coverage, like you said, that same scene, tramping through the jungle, 5, 6 times in one, with a close-up, then they got to do it again for a wide shot, then they got to move the camera so they can get it from a different angle.
It's like making a movie.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they, were shooting an episode every 8 days and oftentimes had 2 to 3 teams running at the same time. So while they were doing an island story, they had the other team working on, whatever the off-island story was. And, all of it, of course, was still shot in Hawaii, but in order to be efficient, they had to have units, 2 to 3 units. And the third unit might be just, doing pickups or, small insertions that they needed to do, hands, close-ups, things that they needed to put into the episodes. And it was aggressive. And, you really, they're out there in the wild, the actors doing, along with the crew, because they're out there doing, moving the lights and rigs and all that kind of stuff. So it was an exhausting show, anywhere from 12 to 15-hour days plus. Working overnights on weekends. So, when they were committed to doing Lost from August until April, that was their life. You really love it when it's not your episode, because you actually get a chance to maybe, be on one of those secondary crews or just have a couple of days of work. But when it was your episode, or, when it was one of those really intensive ones where it was really the big ensemble, they were working a lot. And they definitely, it wasn't a... one of those cushy kind of like, I'll be in my trailer kind of a things. They were busting it out there, and I was very impressed by their work ethic out there.
Right. Now, Daniel Day-Kim, for some reason, gets 6 pages. He's got a huge, I'm looking through his, and some beautiful, beautiful pictures. Why did he especially get so much coverage? I love it, but
no,
I mean, I'm wondering why.
He's got the same as all of, we categorized everything according to an A+, which is the 6 pages.
So Jack, even Jack has that much in his?
Yeah, Jack's got 6, and Kate, and Sawyer, and everybody that was an A+, got that 6-page breakdown, and anything that was really small, like an E, which is what we considered ones that were about 150 words, those are the small ones that are inserted on pages and such. And sometimes it looks like someone gets a bigger spread or a smaller spread, but it just depends on how many pictures that we had to use. And we tried to remain relatively consistent in giving what their major themes were, who their island off island island and on-island connections were, who really impacted them as a character and either changed a little bit of their destiny or impacted the things and choices that they made, and then, you know, really tried to focus in on major moments or plot devices that really did something. So, you know, of course, with Janet's son has a lot of impact, and his daughter has a lot of impact, and, him going off on the raft with Sawyer and Michael and Walt, and then, his impact with his father-in-law. So we really tried to put in as much of that material we could, but, you know, a lot of people will say, couldn't it have been a bigger book? And, you know, there's, you know, that has nothing to do with the writers, with Paul and I. You know, we wrote enough for, believe me, a book and a half, what we created. But, you know, for price points and making something, you know, actually a viable price point for someone to purchase, you know, our publishers really decided that 404 pages was best. So, you know, we really tried our best to give those major characters those six-page spreads so that they got as much time as possible, and we really could tell their stories as best. Possible.
Now, even I'm looking at Jacob's one. Even, the kids that played Jacob as young and somebody, whoever that other one, oh, his brother, were good actors.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
they got
really
quality
were.
Actors in this show, and they didn't get anybody who couldn't act. I mean, you didn't see anything really. I mean, everything was the quality on all the actors was wonderful. I mean, the guy who plays John Locke, Terry O'Quinn, who I used to watch on what was that show he was on after the X-Files that he was on. I can't remember.
Millennium?
Yeah, Millennium. Thank you.
He
was great on that. He's great in everything he does. I mean, he just seems to be...
Yeah, he was one of those guys before Lost, you know, that it was like always, oh, that guy that was in The Rocketeer, and that guy was in Millennium, and that guy was, you know, the stepfather. You know, you kind of forget his name, but you always knew when he was in something, the guy brought it. And, it was really only Alias.
And there were weeks I hated John Locke. I couldn't stand
him. Oh, God, yeah. You go, come on, John, what are you doing? You know, he gets so stuck by his own inability to, you know, get past his daddy issues and all of that, and you get so frustrated with him. But he really made John an amazing character. And, you know, there was just, when he was on screen, you were just transfixed to his performance and his vulnerability or his stubbornness or his, you know, faith, you know, when he was so in tune with the island. And it just, he's an amazing actor. And it was, you know, if there are other ancillary things that are amazing about Lost, it's that it really did put some performances out there and really let people know how talented some of those actors were. Working on the side, and Locke really gave them a showpiece and a showplace to show how great they were.
And lucky Daniel Day Kim, you know, he gets to stay in Hawaii to do Hawaii for it all. He must be in heaven. I mean, it's like you don't have to leave.
Yeah, no, and a lot of the crew, it's funny, a lot of the crew from 24 actually went over to Hawaii to work on Hawaii 5-0, but then another big chunk of the crew from Lost are working on Hawaii 5-0 or Off the Map, which is the new Shonda Rhimes show.
Are they filming that in Hawaii too?
That's in Hawaii. That's actually on the sets for where Lost was, right outside the
Diamond Head. That's really cool.
So it's nice because not only do you have this kind of, you know, familiarity with Daniel on Hawaii 5-0, but you also have a lot of people that worked on that show. Kind of, you know, they're all a family as well, still working with each other in different capacities. So, yeah, Hawaii is really breeding this really great production team and this really new set of really smart and talented craftsmen and all, you know, behind the scenes as well out there in Hawaii. And that's really wonderful to see. There's some really generous, really, really wonderful people I met behind the scenes on Lost. And I'm so happy that they're so busy out there still with other shows.
What's great about this book, it's not one of these books where you go through it, you know, maybe two or three times and you put it down and never look at it again. There's always something new every time you turn the pages. I mean, you just see something you didn't see before.
Oh, good.
And, you know, you're looking through the pictures. I mean, there's just so much. How could you possibly take it all in? It's so overwhelming, the amount of work that must have gone in to do this book.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. It was a lot of work, a lot of time. Paul and I are huge fans of the show, so for us it was, you know, a labor of love. It was a lot of stress though too, because as fans, we know the fandom of Lost is extraordinarily demanding, and that it wasn't going to cut it to just kind of do it well. And that put probably even, you know, more stress on us. Because, you know, we know where there have been other books for other projects and other things where, you know, fans haven't been happy or have felt like it was incomplete, and nobody wanted to do this book kind of halfway. And you know, we really worked closely with the show and our publishers to really push ourselves, to push the designers, to push, you know, everybody to go, listen, is that enough? I think we could do more. And, you know, and I know we, you know, Paul and I know we exhausted our editors at times and we exhausted our designers at times. But, you know, it was really, I think, for the betterment of the book. And, you know, we really just wanted to make it as special as it could be because the fans, you know, deserve that. They deserve to have something to look at. You know, we hear from a lot of people now that they're using it as a companion when they do their rewatch of the show, you know, now that everything's out on DVD and they've had time to kind of think about how the show ended. They're going back and watching it from the beginning, and it's been so wonderful to hear fans say, yeah, I crack the book open while I'm watching, and I flip open to that entry, and I read it along, and I go, oh, yeah, and, you know, I catch things by reading and vice versa, and, you know, there's nothing more complimentary than that, you know, to know that we're kind of part of a new phase of people watching the show. For the first time, we're going back and watching it again, and people think we're an integral part of that, and that's just, it's honoring, you know, it's humbling beyond belief.
Yeah, and I would get confused. I admit that there were things that confused me. I'd watch an episode.
Oh, yeah.
And all you, it was like watching, when you watch The X-Files, you always had questions at the end. It was never, everything was never answered. You had to come back and watch it the next week and hope there was another thing answered. I mean, it was never, you never got total. Even at the end, you felt like there was still something you wanted to see more. I mean, I don't know about you, but I still wanted to see more after the May. I wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much. I'm looking through the Hurley's Mr. Cluck's Chicken Shack stuff here, and this is amazing. I mean, was any of this stuff that you took pictures of when you were in Hawaii, or is this all stuff from that's owned by the lost people? In this book.
No, everything is from, you know, some photography that I took and a photographer took for Lost Magazine was in the magazine, you know, stuff from the shore and the beach camp and, you know, those things were
but
in Lost
Magazine. You did interviews too, right, with the cast?
Yeah, for that project, exactly. For the Lost Magazine, it was all interviews and discussions with the crew and the writers as well as the cast. For the book, no interviews and no photography. Everything came from the ABC archives. But what was really nice about it was that ABC and Team Lost said, here is everything that we've got, all of their episodic photography, all of their prop photography, a lot of the really nice shots that you see in the book that are just of, you know, a piece. Maybe it's like Squirrel Baby or it's, you know, some great, you know, Sawyer's rubber band in the middle glasses or, you know, some of the rings or jewelry or things that you saw throughout the show. Those were all a lot of the prop photography for the big auction that happened in August of last year, that where they auctioned off tons of stuff from the show that was used in the show. So before, you know, they cataloged all of that, they gave us access to it as well. So we had beautiful, clear, high-definition photography so that we can incorporate it into the book as well. And then, you know, one of the reasons a lot of people were, you know, frustrated that the book didn't come out in August with the DVD set last year, but we had to wait to actually get photography from the epilogue, which was in the big DVD set, because, you know, they had such a really tight guard on anything being leaked from that. So they didn't even give us episodic photography from that until about 2 weeks before the book was supposed to have come out. So, of course, it wasn't going to be able to come out, you know, with the DVD. And we let people know that at San Diego Comic-Con last July so that everybody would know. But, you know, we were all of that was official from the show. So, you know, we were so grateful to have it and grateful because it added so much to the book, you know, and that was, you know, made the book even more special that we really could just go right into their closet, per se, and take out whatever we wanted, whatever we could.
And you used to interviewing famous people, so I guess it really, I mean, it was, it must have been a thrill for you, but I mean, were there any that were really shy and they really didn't want to be interviewed? When you?
Yeah, I mean, there's always some actors that don't like talking about the craft, you know, that's par for the course, you know. I mean, I've done plenty of things where I end up on camera and I hate watching it, so, you know, when actors go, I don't like looking at myself, you know, I totally get it because I don't like doing it either, so, you know, you don't push them. You just kind of go, okay, that's fine. And, you know, but most of them consider it part of their gig. And they, they like to talk about, you know, they don't like talking about their who they're dating or breaking up with and stuff, which was always, you know, stuff I didn't like to dump into anyway. That's not the kind of writer that I am. And I was always so appreciative that the magazine was around because, you know, Paul was the editor of that, and he had a very strong mandate that, you know, it's not, you know, you can find out about your gossipy junk in Us or, you know, the Inquirer or People. You know, we were really about the making of the show, and we had really wonderful participation from the actors on the show because, you know, a lot of those places don't care about what they think about their character. They just want the dishy stuff. But for us, we would get really wonderful in-depth interviews about why they chose what they did acting-wise and, you know, what they liked or disliked or had to figure out how to play if they didn't expect it in a script about their character. And, you know, we were a really important repository that, you know, allowed those actors and the writers and the directors to talk about the craft of putting that show together. And for me, that's fascinating. You know, if you really liked Lost, you wanted to know, you know, how it came together. And I was always really grateful to be able to interview so many of them about their choices and what they thought about their characters and the evolution over 6 years.
Right. Now, if I had to pick a favorite character, I think my two would be Jack and Kate. In the 6 years, those are the two I became the most fascinated with, I think.
How come? You know, I love to hear why people, like, connected with certain characters. What about them really got you?
I just like Jack because he was always so expressive. I mean, he always mm-hmm. expressed his emotions so well. I mean, he was, for a while, hiding things. I know that. But, I mean, right. For the most part, he was just, I think Matthew Fox was just extraordinary. I mean, he took the character to all these different places. That, you know, the anger that was so much a part of him, and, you know, the anger at his father, the anger at Kate, the anger, I mean, all over the place, anger at John Locke, and even Juliet at one point, you know, and not Juliet. And, you know, everybody seemed to change so much. And, you know, everything changed from season to season. It seemed like the dynamic of the show. I mean, sometimes it would go one way, and then it would go another way. I mean, and you wonder, what's going on here? And then Ben, of course, I mean, just the creepiest character. I mean, I could never like Ben because he was too creepy for me.
He could turn on a dime. You know, you could feel, I remember in that last season episode where he's, you know, having that confrontation with Alana and he's like, when he finally had to talk about, you know, killing her father and, you know, basically being despised by everybody, and he's on the beach and everybody's kind of coming back, and he just looks like this lost and lonely soul. And for all the horrible things that Ben did, you know, you should think, oh, good, he deserves that. But Mike Lemerson was so amazing, and you watch that scene, it actually felt bad for him.
You do.
You feel the humanity and the mistakes that man has made, and, you know, it just washes off in that performance so beautifully. And, that's why, I loved, you know, I really loved Terry, his Locke. I really loved Mike Lemerson, you know, his Ben, just because, you know, he loved to hate him, and then you...
He pretty much stole the show when he was on. He stole the show when he was on the camera. I mean, he really stole it.
And then at the very end, the very, very end, you know, where he's, you know, on that bench and talking to Locke and, you know, talking about, you know, there's apologies to each other and what they had done to each other. Beautiful, beautiful moment. And that was a great moment for two characters that I loved, you know, have them, you know, have that moment together. And then I really loved, I'll agree with you. I loved Kate. She was a very lightning rod character. A lot of people hated her. They felt like, you know, she was vacillated too much or was, you know, too much in people's faces and then caused problems and stuff. But
I always liked her spunk.
I liked her spunk. I liked that she grew up, you know, that she really found a purpose in Aaron, and, you know, it became less about the boys and more about that little boy and how she was on a mission to find Claire and bring her back. And that's an intriguing, you know, answer that, you know, at the end when she flies away and her and Claire are going to go back to Aaron, and you think where that story will go. You know, those two women that have loved this little boy and having to kind of heal each other to be a mother to him, and that's exciting, and that makes that character very interesting to me. And I love Sawyer. I'm always a sucker in shows for the bad boy that gets a redemption, that actually, you know, turns out to have a better purpose and have more inside of him. And I thought you know, him being the jerk and then him, you know, finding that he could be a good person. And then the relationship with Juliet, you know, in season five was amazing. They sold that romance in basically the span of an episode. And
yeah, I never believed that romance very well. I don't
really
know why. It never seemed very real to me. I don't know. It always seemed forced to me.
It was quick, I'll give you that, but I bought it, and that, for me, one of the greatest moments of the very end of the show was when they had their awakening moment together, and to me, oh my goodness, I had waterworks like crazy when the two of them, you know, remembered each other, and I was like, oh, gosh, that really worked for me. But yeah, you know, I mean, it was a long shot in trying to make that work, and some people, you know, like you yourself, were like, no, that was too quick, you know, I didn't buy it, but, you know, it worked for me, I think, just based on the arc that those two characters had gone on. But, you know, that's the great thing about Lost is there's so much in it for you to like and dislike and for, you know, everybody to have a subjective kind of response to, which, you know, a lot of shows you just go like, oh, okay, they solved that case. All done. I'll come back next week. You know, Lost just left you thinking all the time, and that's, you know, that's the hallmark for me of a great show.
Now, see, Juliet only gets two pages. As fascinating a character she was, we didn't find out an awful lot about her, did we? I mean,
you had a pretty good arc. You know, you knew that where she came from in terms of a bad marriage and, you know, not having a lot of self-esteem and having her, you know, being very brilliant at her fertility issues, with her science, but in trying to save her sister. And that, you know, it was very tragic. You know, she went to go and try to do something to help other people and then got stuck on that island and, had to live her existence there because of Ben's obsession with her for a big chunk of her life. And, you know, it was very tragic in its own way. And, I think, you know, you got a pretty good sense of who she used to be, kind of, you know, a little bit of a...
But not the intense backstory you
but
got.
But not the intensity of the others, no. We didn't get a chance to, you know, have as full of a mind as some of the others.
Did they have everything planned out from the very beginning? I mean, when they were filming season one, did they know what season six was going to be all about? I mean, was everything planned in advance?
No, there's no, you know, a lot of people expect TV shows to have that happen, and, you know, that's impossible. There's no show on the planet that, you know, you go, oh, I know exactly what's going to happen, because you don't even know if the show's going to get picked up. I mean, you know, writing a pilot and having that picked up is a miracle. You know,
the pilot was fantastic.
It was, till to this day, my top three pilots I've ever seen. I mean, I was just blown away when I first saw it, and, you know, so you have a general idea of what you're going to want to do with a serialized show. But, you know, they knew that they wanted to open the show with Jack's Eye. They wanted to close the show with Jack's Eye. They knew, you know, that the arc was very much going to be based on, you know, Jack's redemption and figuring out who he was, as well as, you know, ingraining all of these other stories into that as well. But, you know, you bring in a character actor like Michael Emerson, and he's supposed to be on for three episodes, and he blows the doors off of that character, and they watch it in dailies back in California, and they go, well, we got to keep this guy on the show. He's amazing. You know, you put him in a room with Terry O'Quinn, and you put him in a room with Matt Fox, and with, all the other cast, and you go, it's fireworks. So, you know, that wasn't planned. They had never even known that Michael Emerson was going to walk through their door when they first got there.
I don't know why anybody ever trusted Ben. I mean, that used to make me so mad. I mean, why did anybody trust this jerk?
You know,
he never was trustworthy.
Right. And then, you know, you have other actors that wanted to leave, you know, that just didn't dig Hawaii. So they, you know, that suddenly changes the course of what you intended to do.
Oh, is that what happened? I didn't realize that had happened.
That happened with a couple of actors, you know, they just did not want to be in Hawaii anymore, too far from family or what they knew or, you know, and so, you know, as you don't want to keep someone there, like, you know, indentured servitude.
Well, I must say that once Anna Lucia was gone, I really missed her because she was such a strong character. I mean, major pain in the neck, but...
But she came back, you know, she came back in a couple different capacities, you know, so there was no love lost, but she wanted to go off and do films and such again, and there were other actors, you know, that just wanted to do the same, and so your job as a showrunner when you write your show is that you have to go, okay, I've been given this left turn, what do I do next? And that's the part of writing a show that you cannot plan for 6 years in advance. And Lost was so complicated and so deep that they could come up with the big points that they wanted to hit every season. Here's where we'll start. this is what we want to have happen by the middle of the season, and here's where we want to be at the end of the season so we can start the next season right here. They planned all of that out, absolutely. But, you know, every season had its, you know, its disasters, its happy accidents, its, you know, discoveries in the writer's room. And so, no, a lot of it's organic, and that's every TV show that you see out there, even ones that feel like they've been, you know, airtight, created from day one to the very end. You know, that's just not how a show runs.
So. Now, is there anything that's not in the book, alphabetically, that you wanted to put in?
In terms of...
anything from the show. Anything at all that you didn't fit in. I mean, it seems like everything's in here, but I'm wondering if there's anything that didn't make it in.
No, you know, honestly, we overwrote. You know, Paul and I overwrote like crazy. And, you know, our editors, eyes spun back in their heads when they saw how much material that we were giving them. So, yeah, you know, there's, you know, some stuff that we would have liked to have had extra pages to put in, but you know, again, every project you'll ever work on in your life is a compromise, and there's parameters, and so we would rewrite to try to fit smaller areas, or you know, we would try to put things in photo captions, you know, so that at least that point wasn't forgotten. But some fans have said, oh, you left out, you know, this character, or you left out, you know, Sawyer's ex, you know, girlfriend. But you know, the problem is, too, is that, you know, there's a lot of repetition that can happen with actors and with the characters. So you don't want to read the book and go, like, wait, I already read that before. And so we made a lot of choices with the show, and everything was done with the show, and nothing was arbitrary, where we would, so long as characters were mentioned under major characters that they impacted, so long as they were mentioned in the book, sometimes if they didn't get their own entry, it's just because it would feel too repetitious, and we wanted to just put it under, you know, like Clementine is Sawyer's daughter, and, you know, her mother, you know, some people were like, why isn't Cassidy in the book? And we're like, Cassidy is in the book, but Cassidy's under Sawyer because she really impacted him. And we felt like, you know, if we made a second entry, we wouldn't be able to talk about those scenes differently. So Cassidy was put underneath Sawyer, and Clementine, who's, you know, a small character, had her own little small entry. But everybody is referenced in the book, so no, I mean, we really feel like, you know, just because, you know, it doesn't have its own entry, so long as it's mentioned in the book, we feel like we've been completest with it, so.
Right, and I think, obviously you did a phenomenal job. There's no, when you look through this book, you just can't believe all the stuff in it. And you, like I said, you just go through it all. Now there's these paintings on page, whatever, I don't know what page this is. I'm wondering what these paintings are. They're on page 66 and 67. They're beautiful paintings. What are those?
Yeah, so basically, it was a team book. So our design team and our editors, you know, really came up with the interstitial ideas, which were the paintings, the weapons, the games, the animals. There's that kind of funny chart with the animals on the island, and it ends with the smoke monster. You know, they decided to kind of, you know, try to highlight things in an interesting thematic way that would give fans, you know, just something to kind of browse and remember and look at. And so those paintings were all featured in the show, either in sets, or they may have been actually painted by Jack Bender, who is one of the executive producers and constant director on the show, which means he did pretty much the majority of all directorial efforts on the show. But he's also an incredible artist. He's a painter. He's a sculptor. He has he had a wood sculpting, area right outside of his office at the studios where when he was thinking, he'd go out and work. And so that was a fun place where when there was artwork that, you know, thematically, made some impact or was, you know, should have, you know, been something that maybe as a fan you didn't catch in an episode. It went by really quickly, but, you know, we all thought, hey, you should look at this. You know, we can give it to you now to take a look at. So that was, you know, that was a nice way for them to kind of put those images in one place that you may not have seen, looking at an episode.
Right. What was the most shocking for you when you saw the last episode?
I have to say that nothing is shocking because Paul and I, you know, we were working with the show really closely, so we knew what was going to happen. You know, we had a really tight deadline in terms of when
you knew it all in advance.
It was due. Right. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, we'd always been ahead of the game just because with the magazine, in order to stay pertinent, you know, we always had to know what was coming so that we could interview the actors and not be behind.
But you couldn't tell anybody. The worst thing is you couldn't tell anybody.
That's part of our job. That's just what we do, you know?
But when you find out something really juicy, you know, I had a guy at work who would tell me little things that he'd heard from different people. But
yeah, no, it's a different world for us because there's no temptation. It's literally what we were faced with.
You never had that time where you wanted to call somebody up and tell them something really juicy? Never?
No, never. No, because here's my choice. I say something to somebody, and then I run the risk of someone posting it on a board or telling the internet, and then I lose my job.
Yeah, that's true.
Or I shut up and I keep my job,
and I get
to do this really amazing thing, like write the Lost Encyclopedia, you know, have access to amazing things that, you know, fans would give their eye teeth for. And I always choose keep my mouth shut.
Well, you've learned over the years to do that.
I would much rather have that kind of relationship with a show where they trust us, unequivocally, because they know that, you know, their property is more important to them than that, you know, ego justification or satisfaction for a couple of minutes. You know, it's just not worth it to Paul or myself to, you know, blab when, you know, we could talk to each other because, you know, the two of us have the same, you know, slap order on each other, but, you know, we never talk to our significant others about it. We never talk to any of our friends about it. You know, they look at us and just know, yeah, we're not getting anything out of them. And, you know, it's not to go like, ha-ha, I know something you don't. It's like, hey, this is my job, you know? It's like if I worked at the White House and had, you know, key codes that no one could know, you just don't share it. And Lost and 24 are like my key codes, you know? I just kind of shut up about it, so... You know, I feel so grateful and honored that I've, you know, even been allowed to work on those kinds of shows where they trusted us with that. So, to me, that's all the reward I need.
Who do you think was the most evil character on the show? If you had to pick one that was the worst.
That's a good question.
I think Ben. I think Ben's the most evil. But I know there's probably more. I mean, Charles Widmore is probably more evil than Ben. But
they
have their own individual evil things.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, none of them as a character would say that they thought they were evil. You know, I think that they always thought that they had their reasons. But certainly Ben was a character very much tainted by his own ego. Widmore even more, you know, because, you know, both of those men were basically, drafted and in the inner circle with Jacob to protect the interests of the island. And somewhere along the line, it became less about protecting the island and more about being in control of the island. And you know, that kind of darkness that comes over your soul is a bad thing, you know, and they stop doing things for the right reasons.
So they
would say that their reasons were more, you know, weren't meant to be evil, but, you know, they certainly made themselves, you know, present with very bad choices. So I'd say, you know, I think Charles really had some darkness going on that, caused a lot of problems. And I think that, you know, we don't know much about the Jacobs and the Man in Black's mother, and while I think she also thought that she was doing things for the almighty good of the island, you know, she did some rough stuff, you know, she bashed that poor little Roman woman's head, in with a rock, and then she also, you know, really pitted her kids, you know, against each other to a certain degree, and... You could say that there's some evil stuff going on with that, even though if it was for the right reasons. So she was a very questionable, you know, character. I mean, she wiped out all the people that lived on that island, you know, when she found out that they were trying to, you know, get to the heart of the island. And, you know, you always have to look at things when you make a choice to do something for the right reasons, but you commit genocide to do it.
Right.
That's kind of a dark thing to do. So,
and then then you have that evil Dharma Initiative guy on the video. He used to scare me when I saw him. I mean,
oh, poor thing. He wasn't evil. He was just a weird dude. I think he was a little less socialized.
But it was so creepy to see him on a video that had been shot, like, you know, you knew it had been shot like years and years ago, it's like, it's kind of... It scares the daylights out of you.
It's one of those weird kind of in search of kind of things. I remember that show used to freak me out as a kid. I remember the episode on the Amityville Horror that completely wigged me out as a child for the rest of my life. And, you know, it had that kind of weird scratchy, off-tune music and that black and white skipping and him petting the rabbit and talking about weird stuff. So, yeah, Pierre, I think if I was a lot younger watching the show, would have totally given me a bit of a complex.
Now, I'm looking at Dr. Douglas Brooks, who actually was Bruce Davison from Willard,
yeah.
That movie Willard.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just one of the character actors. You can go through this whole book and find so many more and people you know you've seen on other shows. It's just amazing.
You know, Juliet's husband, Dr. Burke, he was an evil character. He's a nasty guy. You know, he was very controlling, and even when he separated from Juliet, he still had his thumb on her and was basically trying to steal her research for his own, for his own profit. And then he got hit by a bus. So that's one of those moments where you kind of go, well, that was, that was kind of other-inspired karma, but he was a nasty dude, so he was evil. I would put him in the category of a very very non-likable character and a very poorly morally founded character as well.
And you got Jeff Fahey, who played Frank Lapidus, and it was amazing because I used to watch him when he was young, and he's an old man now. I mean, he's really...
I know.
And it's like, is this the same guy? And it kind of freaks you out at first, and then you get used to it. And of course, Faraday. I love Faraday. I mean, he just had so many great lines of dialogue, and he could see so many things.
Yeah, Jeremy did a great job playing him. He really, imbued him with a lot of vulnerability and that kind of really wonderful, kind of a little bit of mad scientist kind of tinge, and that just earnestness, that came off whenever he was talking about, his Charlotte and the island and such. And he was such a winning portrayal and a really interesting character.
Now, who were those two characters that everybody made fun of, the ones that were on for like one season?
Oh, Nikki and Paolo.
I mean, they were like, I mean, where did they come from? Why did they even put them on the island? It turned out to be a joke. Everybody thought those two were a joke.
Disliked majorly. Well, they always said, there were 48 survivors from the plane, and they had always said that they wanted to have the core cast, but that they always wanted to be able to bring in some of those other survivors.
I mean, Rose and Bernard were great, but, Nikki
right,
and Paolo.
They worked, but Nikki and Paolo, I think just the way that they brought them in, it was so kind of in your face, and the actors didn't have a chance to kind of feel like they had transitioned. It was just like, boom, who are these goobers that are suddenly going out on their little adventures?
Yeah, we never saw them before, and all of a sudden they're appearing.
Yeah, and that was, there were plenty of other extras, that we did see, especially during that first season, and, they're included in the book as well, that they'd go out on, the golf tournaments, or they'd go out on the food runs, or, when they were trying to kill boar. So you did kind of, almost like the Ethan Rom character, Ethan, you just saw him participating, and then you find out he's a kind of a psychopath from the others, and, he becomes a huge big bad in the first season when he takes Claire and, tries to kill Charlie. So he was kind of, added in a very naturalistic kind of way so that, he was a twist, yet he also felt like he was not a sore thumb. Nikki and Paolo, they tried to bring them in to kind of juice up the storyline and give new people to have in the dynamics when they took people and did things on the island, and they just did not work well. And they figured it out pretty quickly, and then, the audience members howled, as soon as they saw those episodes, and then they, kind of vindicated it by, making that kind of Twilight Zone-y episode about their origins and how they were double-crossing each other as a couple, and then, the Medusa spider, which we have as an entry in the book, and, how they paralyzed them, and then they were kind of buried alive, which was, kind of a really fun way to finish off their characters, and, a very, very much on-the-nose, tongue-in-cheek, kind of like, we know you hated them, and we've gotten rid of them for you, but doing it in a way that actually made a really strong episode. So while they didn't work when they were first introduced, I think they certainly had an exit from the show that was on the right note and was a very strong episode.
And then you had the actor who played Jacob, who he's been in so many, he's in Supernatural, he's in all these different shows. I think he was even in Dexter for a season.
And he's also in Being Human, the U.S. version on Sci-Fi right now. He plays a vampire.
Is he really?
Yeah, Mark Pellegrino is amazing. He's a fantastic actor. And
it's kind of weird, though. You see him in so many different shows, it almost dilutes you think, wow, he's so different in each show.
I think that's great. He's got a chameleon kind of power to him that, he can be that distinction.
And you got to be a good actor or it doesn't work. It just ends up...
Otherwise you're just a mess and you just look at every show going, oh, that's him, that's him. But it's fun, is that depending on your fandom, you know, when he came to Lost, people were, you know, were like, wait, he's from Supernatural, yeah. And, you know, oh, he's from, you know, Dexter, and you know, he was also in a ton of movies where people know him from, too, where he played, you know, kind of itchy, twitchy kind of people, and so I think it's great, you know, that he's another actor, I think, that's supremely benefited from being on the exposure with Lost, but now you see him all over the place, and, you know, that's great for actors, because it's rough out there, lots of competition, and he's certainly got a great niche now.
And then there's Richard Alpert, I really loved. I mean, there's something about him that I really liked. I wish that we'd found out more about him. We had that episode where we found out some stuff about him, but he really wasn't featured all that much. He always ended up, you know, you always saw him walking, it seemed like.
Yeah. You know, Richard was meant to be enigmatic, and he certainly was. You know, we only really got that backstory in the very last season, but Nestor Carbonell is, like, one of the greatest people, just a wonderful, wonderful man, and it was so nice that, you know, everybody wanted that episode. Fan-wise, they're like, please give us a Richard Alpert story, and he just knocked it out of the park. How great that episode was! You know, you learned how poignant, you know, his choices are made because of his wife, and you know why he was immortal, and you know looked exactly the same through you know the lives of all of these people, and then you know he gets redemption, you know, at the end. He's gonna leave the island and have a life, which is pretty pretty amazing, you know. It's a rebirth moment, and that felt really great that character earned that, even though he remained so enigmatic for so long. But you know, that was beautiful, you know, that you really did have a character that when you knew he was coming on camera, it was an uh-oh moment. What's up, and oh, what are we going to learn? And you just, you know, immediately, as an audience member, targeted into everything he said and how he looked at the other characters. And, you know, all of it suddenly became so much more heated and important. And, you know, that's the great writing and that's great acting. You know, Nestor just really was able to accomplish so much.
You know what I really missed? I missed the Michael and Walt's relationship. It was so wonderful in the first couple seasons. But then when he got, you know, he was off the island for a while, I missed that. I missed the relationship between the two of them, because we didn't see much of it afterwards. And
yeah, I think Harold Perrineau would agree with you. You know, I think he they definitely had a transition for that character, and you know, he was one of the first to, you know, really, they wanted him to come back to make an impact, to try to have justification and redemption for the poor choices that he made in the pursuit of his son. And you know, he was a very flawed character. You know. Bad choices, you know.
But a powerhouse character, one you loved watching.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and it was nice that he did come back. You know, he got that Kevin Johnson, arc when he came back on the Kahana, and then you know, when you got to see him appear to Hurley in the very last season, you know, that you knew that there was still a lot to be finished, you know, with his own redemption there on the island. And yeah, you missed him when he came back. You remember the legacy that he had left. And that's, you know, again, Lost leaves you wanting more, like you said. You know, there's plenty of times where you go, no, I want to know more. What happened?
I think
that Walt go back and, you know, help, you know, basically have his father, you know, leave that place. You know, is he going to have redemption in some form? Will he be, as a whisper, some important factor in the island? You know, what's that mean? You know, so, yeah, there's so much more to still want to know.
And I think, and you may disagree with me here, but I'm going to tell you my two favorite episodes.
Okay.
And you probably won't believe what I tell you, because I've told other people the one, and they're like, are you kidding me? The one of Charlie where he's holding the baby in the water when he's having all these problems with drugs.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, my favorite episode. It was such a powerful episode. I mean, more so than anyone, I thought, because it just left me breathless. I mean, just watching it and it was so powerful to watch him, and the actor, of course, was just wonderful.
Yeah.
And
Dom was great.
I don't know that one. I still see that one in my head. I still see him standing in the water with the baby. I still see all of that, and it really left a mark on me. And that's what happened.
There was a lot of really powerful imagery in that episode. There really was. You know, they had a lot of you know, his imagery from his family and his mother, and you know him with the baby, with Aaron, and you know, there's a very, you know, Locke knocking him off of his feet, you know, punching him out because of, you know, him being so kind of crazy about, you know,
right.
You know, what he thought was protecting the baby, and instead it scared the hell out of everybody else around him, including Claire. So, yeah, it was a real big turning point for Charlie. And
Just imagine.
It was very divisive among fans. Some fans were like, you know, no, it's with Charlie and the Crazy Bin too much, and they didn't like to see him in that place. But it was a very important place for him to go into his own redemptive arc with what his eventual choices were to sacrifice himself.
Well, see, and that's what makes this show so wonderful. Everybody has a different opinion. My other favorite is the Rose one where she's got cancer.
I love that one, too.
I mean, that one just touched me in a way. A lot of the episodes touched me, but not like that.
That was a great one. That was a great one. Based so much on the strength of those two actors and their rapport and learning. You know, you'd always know that Rose had that faith, you know, when she was on the beach in the first episode with her husband laying around her neck.
Yeah, and she and Jack had such a connection. I wanted to see more of scenes with them together so much. I really was hoping there'd be a lot more.
But it was really great to have an episode where we did get to see where that relationship came from and how much they loved each other and what they were willing to sacrifice for each other. And that was really beautiful, too. Yeah, I don't think either one of those choices are off your rocker. I'll fight them with you. I think
that's right. Well, it's people have, everybody's got. I mean, if you could pick two, what would you pick?
Oh, gosh. See, that's so hard because, you know.
Well, there has to be a couple that stick out in your mind.
Yeah, the pilot still to this day, just because I think it was such a fantastic introduction for such a complicated show. It looked like a movie. Everybody in it was giving, you know,
when the back of that plane took off, just blows you away to watch it.
It really does. Really stunning. And so, you know, that one still, to me, is a huge impact episode for me for that series. You know, I really liked. Let me think. I'm going through the list of the seasons in my head. You know, I really. I would say.
It's hard to pick.
The end of season two, when we find out that they, at the very end of the episode, that they've gone back. You know, that they have have gone back to the island. And, you know, that there were some of them, Jack and Kate, were off of the island, and Jack goes, you know, we have to go back. That was a killer moment. You know, that was pretty impressive. I think, you know, I mean, I look back on it now, I think also, you know, where Charlie died, that was really, and then also, you know, The Constant is an amazing episode, too. You know, the episode where Desmond is jumping around, you know, temporally displaced, and he makes that phone call to Penny.
Oh, yeah, wonderful.
And then you do get to have, you know,
I love him. I can't wait to see what he's going to do next.
So good. And to have the moment where he and Penny do get back together again after, for so long, you're just like, they're never going to give it to them, are they? You know, Desmond's never going to get Penny, and it's going to be one of those tragic stories where he's just never going to, he had realized, you know, the dumb things that he made choices for about ego, that he's going to lose the love of his life, and when you had that moment, and you knew that they had that moment where they got back together, and even when, you know, on the boat, when Desmond, you know, the helicopter, the Kahana blows up, and, you know, basically the Oceanic crew come out, you know, and they are picked up by Penny's boat, and they get to see each other. You know, those are really great moments too.
You have a lot of vivid moments.
It's a lot. You know, I mean, Paul and I have had, you know, if you're a super fan, you watch the show over and over and over again, and that's not knocking anybody if you haven't watched it over and over again. You know, it's, you know, some people watched it once and had an incredibly fulfilling experience doing that. You know, Paul and I had to watch all the episodes about three or four times each to write this book, six seasons. So, you know, we had to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, and so then you do really get a moment to get really remember the moments where you watch it again and you're spellbound and you start tearing up and you're like, holy cow, that's, you know, amazing.
And another thing is, yeah, in this book, there's a lot of scenes from the show, too, so you can actually remember some of the scenes, some of the episodes from the scenes you see in on these pages. I mean, it's just all over the place. The richness of this book is just amazing. I mean, DK does great with everything. I mean, you've certainly outdone yourself with this one, and everybody's just going to love this book. And if you're a fan, you have to have it. How could you not get this?
Luckily it was a holiday gift through the month of December for a lot of people. We were really happy to hear that a lot of people for Hanukkah and Christmas and Kwanzaa and such, you know, have that as a gift. You know, we've been hearing from a lot of people now, you know, that they've digging into it and, you know, letting us know that they really are happy, you know, with, you know, being able to go down memory lane with the show through the book again, which is wonderful. And, you know, There's no better thing, you know, for fans that Paul and I are first and foremost fans of the show, and you know, we wanted to make sure that, you know, that the show had its legacy, you know, told in a way that respected it, and not only what the show wanted, but what the fans wanted to see. And it was hard work to try to toe that line between the needs of both, and we know it's maybe not a perfect book by everybody's standards, but we are, you know, really happy with, you know, the feedback that we've got back from people.
Absolutely, and I must say one last thing. I never liked Hurley. I must admit, I never liked Hurley.
Oh, no, my goodness, that's, you know, sacrilege with a big part.
I don't care. I never liked the character. I never, I mean, I felt, there were times I felt sorry for him, but I always,
yeah.
He used to annoy the heck out of me. That's all I can say.
No, I mean, I've heard that from other people, too, as well, you know, and it's funny because, you know, he's really made to be the everyman of the show, and some people just, you know, didn't feel like, you know, he's not my opinion of the show, and then there were others that, you know, like, loved Hurley to his, you know, to everything that he did, and you know, I think that's the great thing, again, as we said before, you know, the thing about Lost is that they gave you a cornucopia of people to choose from, to love and to hate and to get and then not get or be on the fence with, and that's, you know, that's rich, you know, for you to be able to walk away with lots of really strong opinions that create and incite debate amongst others that have watched it just as deeply is amazing. You know, it's not a cookie cutter show. It just allowed everybody to, like, enjoy it and interpret it the way you wanted to.
And one other episode that comes to mind when I think of the great ones is the one where the two women get killed. I can't remember their names now.
When that's Anna Lucia,
Libby.
And Libby.
Libby,
yeah.
That one was a tremendous episode. And,
yeah, you know, that was a big shocker, you know, boom, boom, and then you're like, wait a minute, did they just kill two major characters on the show?
Now, you knew that was going to happen way beforehand?
Yeah, we had known that was coming down the pike, yeah, so.
And of course, we didn't have any idea. It just happened, and
no,
it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Are they really dead? Can they really kill two characters off in one show?
Yeah, you know, that's it, the stakes on Lost, you know, there were, you would like to think that everybody was going to be relished and never be let go of, but like in life, people get to take in from you in a heartbeat, and that's what they wanted to have in the show as well, and I think they did a really good job of that.
So, in closing, we've been talking for quite a while, but it's been wonderful. What do you want people to come away with this book? What was your intent? Totally. I mean, when you think about it, what do you want when they read it, what do you want people to think? What do you want?
Well, more than anything, Paul and I, well, one, we wanted to honor the show, and we were so lucky to work with the show hand in hand through all of this book. Everything that we wrote was vetted by the writers of the show, and, you know, when we needed questions answered, that they went all the way up to the top, Damon and Carlton would answer those questions. And so more than anything, you know, we wanted to honor what they wrote and do it in a way that would make them very proud. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we wanted to do something for the fans, you know, that really honored their attention, their dedication, you know, their obsession in the best sense of that word, for what had unspooled in our television sets for 6 years. And, you know, that what Paul and I wanted to do was craft the language of the book in a way that made you remember and made you fall in love with and feel sad again and, you know, be with the journey of these people. If you learn some new things because we connected the dots, that's always exciting to us as well. But in the end, you know, we wanted a book that was lost, from what the show wanted their fans to know and how they wanted them to know it, to, you know, basically a nostalgic walk through the show for the fans that they could love and go back and look at and remember their show in the best way possible. And for us as fans, you know, it was the best possible project ever, you know, that we have our small little stamp on the mythology and the world of Lost, that we are, you know, still to this day humbled that we were asked to do it, and that, you know, the show and ABC was so happy with it, and that we've gotten such wonderful feedback from the fans as well. You know, there's no better reward for us, and that's exactly what we'd hoped we'd get, and we've been very, very happy that, you know, that seems to be the case.
Well, I hope some of the cast has written to you and told you how much they liked it. Some of them must have bought the book, I would assume.
We did see that Jorge Garcia, we were very happy that a friend of ours, Jo Garfin, who's she was a very popular Lost blogger is actually friends with him and gave him a copy, and he sent a picture of him with the book to us, so that was really fun for us to get to see.
That's cool.
Which was awesome, and you know, we've heard the actor Eric Lang, who played Radzinski, who, you know, was that character from The Others, you know,
okay.
That was he just got in touch with me this week and said, I finally got the book, Tara, and I can't believe how wonderful it is, and we were talking about his entry, and it was so much fun. So, you know, we've been getting trickle back from people, and that's just been a lot of fun too. It's just, you know, a little bit more icing on the cake for us to go, yay, they've got a copy in their house.
Well, yeah,
and that's exciting.
I'll treasure this always. I really will. It's just a tremendous buzz. Tara, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you as always. You have such energy. I love listening to your energy.
Well, thank you. Well, David, I love, you know, it's always so much fun to talk to somebody that's a fan as well as so knowledgeable about pop culture and all the
right.
things that I love too. So, you know, it's always our conversations fly right by. So thank
they
you
do.
For having me.
Well, we've been talking to Tara Bennett about the Lost Encyclopedias. Yep. In all your bookstores in DK. And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.